We'll get started. This interview will become a part of the Georgetown Public Library's Oral History Collection. This project focuses on people's memories of Marshall and Carver schools and the issues and events of the 1950s and 60s that led to desegregation. And today it is February 26th. It is about 2:05. And I'm going to introduce my interviewee. And could you give me your full... Oh, well, by the way, I'm Chris Dyer. I'm interviewing you. Could you give me your full name?
Betty Jo Miranda Patterson.
And you said no hyphen or Betty Jo's all
Betty Jo's my first name.
All right. And like I said, it's 2:26:10, and we're interviewing at the second floor Georgetown Public Library study room. A lot to remember. And do you have any nicknames?
Betty Jo, BJ sometimes.
Okay. And what is your date of birth?
12/15/59.
Great.
I'm officially 50 years old.
All right. Well, congratulations. Well, thanks for letting me interview you today. Well, first off, did you grow up in Georgetown?
Yeah, born and raised.
Born and raised. And where did you live in Georgetown?
Lived what we called out in the country. I lived off of Route 2, is now Airport Road.
Okay, so that's west of present-day 35.
Yes, correct.
Great. And what, it just wasn't a neighborhood, it wasn't a subdivision, it was just out in the country?
Out in the country, ran, it was a dairy and farm.
Okay, I was about to ask.
It was a ranch.
What did your parents do for a living?
My parents ran a dairy, they were dairymen.
And you, I guess you pitched
in? When I was young.
When you were young.
I'm one of 10 children.
Okay.
So I was one of the younger children, so I didn't have to milk the cows as much as my older siblings did.
Oh.
They actually worked very, very hard.
Well, you got the good deal then.
Yes, I did.
Do you have any, you said you had a lot of siblings, do you have a lot of relatives here in Georgetown still?
Yes, still.
Most of your family, or who's still around that you have?
A lot of relatives. I mean, aunts, uncles, and lots of cousins.
Okay, great. Let's see, did you and your family belong to a church in Georgetown?
Yes, St. Helens Catholic Church.
St. Helens, and that's for... kind of consider that people listening to this interview really have no idea where anything is.
St. Helens at that time, when I was a child anyways, was on University, not too far from where the Ridge is now.
Okay. And what is the Ridge?
The Ridge is off of Scenic Drive.
And so why is it called the Ridge? Again, we're just explaining to anybody who wouldn't...
The Ridge was predominantly the black section of the town.
Okay. And what is your ethnic background, your family?
Hispanic. I mean Mexican-American.
Okay.
Back then we said Mexican-American. Nowadays you say Hispanic.
Okay. Great. We're kind of talking about growing up in Georgetown. What did your family do for fun? What did you guys do?
My family, what we did then was everything was family-oriented. My parents ran the dairy. Dairy is 24 hours a day. I mean, my father would get up like at 4, my siblings had to be at the dairy by 5:30, and they'd milk cows till about 7:30, then they had to rush to go get cleaned up to get to school. Mostly they were late to school because the buses already ran at my house by 7:10, and so there was one car my brother got to drive, or however they got to school, they were usually late. I know they used to get in trouble for that, but this was their livelihood. So, and then when they came home from school, they would ride the bus home for school, or if they had, my brother had his car, they would, as soon as they got home from school, they had to undress, get ready, and go back to work in the dairy again until 5:30, almost 6:30 at night.
So there didn't sound like there was much time for fun.
No, but in between, my parents tried to, like, my father was very family-oriented, so we did lots of things together. For example, over in that area off of Airport Road, there was also now, I think that section over there, that's there used to be that creek still there, and back then, the property went all the way from that creek all the way. It was A.G. Braun and Curtis Braun on the property, and it went all the way from there to Berry Creek, and then from Berry Creek to 35. It was over 400 acres.
Did it include, I know, driving on that road? There's that old bridge right there that crossed.
Yes, so
that
we drove over that old bridge all the time.
Oh, okay.
Matter of fact, I remember Mr. Fisher, our bus driver, we used to tell him, go fast, Mr. Fisher, go fast, because if he just went a little bit fast, it would bump the back end and it would jaw jump up in the air.
We did that as kids as well. Were there other Hispanic families around you guys, or Mexican American, there were
not for us. We got Housing Flukes were across the street from us.
Okay.
Mrs. Housing Fluke was a teacher. She taught third grade. She was my teacher.
Oh, okay.
So.
And then like
that
I said,
I am Housing Fluke and his family.
Oh, okay. Great.
And matter of fact, where the ranch where we live, the real descendants were the Housing Flukes.
Okay.
There's a story I even have about that, about slave quarters. And
okay.
I've got proof of that.
Oh, great. Well, what we'll do is we'll go through these and we may get back to that, because all of this is interesting to me. So we're talking a little bit about the 50s and the 60s and desegregation. So how were you affected by desegregation when it came? Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I guess the reason I'm here is that I didn't realize probably until I was in my 30s that I must have been a pilot segregation or desegregation. What happened was, I remember my kindergarten class, there were two classes. Mrs. Wilcox had one, she was my teacher, and Mrs. Swoush had the other class. And we actually attended at Carver when it was an all-black school. And I believe that was in 1964. And they put us at the very end of the building. Our two rooms shared the facilities like restrooms and everything. Our lunches were brought to us in carts. We ate inside the classroom. We only left the classroom to get a few hours of play outside the building on the side. And when we'd come back in, I didn't even know it was an all-black school. The only reason I realized it was when we came back in, must have been a hot day, and we all played outside, and we were all real hot and sweaty. You know, they didn't have all the air conditioning like they do nowadays. And remember myself and Pat Cruz, we were in line behind her. We were the last two in line. And Mrs. Wilcox was telling us, hurry up, hurry up. But everybody was so thirsty, they were getting a little extra water from the fountain. And she started to pinch us a little bit, like, hurry up, hurry up. And the bell rang. And when the bell rang, I remember looking, Pat was still getting a drink, and I'm looking, and I saw these tall, skinny black kids. That was my vision. They were at their lockers and getting things from their lockers. And
so you were you involved with a group of Mexican American students that came in, or how did that?
It was mixed. It was everybody. It was Anglo, white, Mexican, black. I don't believe there were any Asian children at that time, you know, in Georgetown. Well, at least in our two, but there was only two kindergarten classes. So I think we were just a pilot project, and I think they chose families that either had siblings already in the school system, because I know a couple of the other kids had older children, siblings as well in school already.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. So you said that y'all were kind of kept separate,
yes.
And so kind of talk about a day in the classroom there. That's really...
It was fun. I remember kids of different colors. That didn't even bother me. Didn't have any bearing whatsoever. We had very nice classrooms. They were big. Carver School. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, of course, there was little settings for a kitchenette and stuff, you know, and you didn't have those back then. Kitchenettes back then were homemade.
Right.
So, you know, they weren't, like, already pre-modeled and made. So, and we did little dishes to play with. I know we had a puppet area. Both teachers had things on their wall. They were very creative themselves. It wasn't things that they could buy. It was things that they had to create. Back then, in order to...
And what age were you
when
you were kindergarten? So I was about to ask, where did you go to school before? But that was your first...
That was my first.
And talk about your siblings, where you said you were one of the younger ones.
Yes.
I'm
number seven.
So where did your siblings go?
No, my siblings all went to Georgetown.
They went to Georgetown.
Back then, it was integrated to where Hispanics could attend school, but it was only white and Hispanics.
Right, because or
white and Mexican American.
That's right, because those schools, which I always thought was interesting, that they
and not all
integrated earlier.
Not all Mexican Americans attended the school.
Right, right.
Some were still segregated.
Okay, great. Do you have anything else on that? And about your school experience that you want to share? I mean, it's...
Other than that, the experience was just fine. I mean, to this day, I think I still remember a lot of the kids, their names, like Pat Cruz, Dexter Satterfield, the Wyatt brothers, Frank and Troy. I remember Marvin Swoush. And
you said Swoush was a teacher,
yes,
too.
Yes, she was a teacher. Mm-hmm. Her son also attended. So she must have been, you know, really wanting to, you know, push the program as well, because she put her own son in the program.
Oh, great. And so was she an Anglo teacher?
Yes.
An Anglo teacher?
Both teachers were Anglos.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Mrs. Wilcox and Mrs. Swoush. And I think Mrs. Swoush is still living.
Okay. I'm taking notes here.
And the funny thing, what I did find about this, when I asked my mother, probably about 10 or so many years ago, I said, Mom, did you realize, I think we were a pilot project? And she said, no, she didn't realize that at all. So I don't know if they completely explained to my mother that it was the first kind of integrated class. And then the next year, after our class, they moved kindergarten to Annie Pearl, and then it was standard after that.
So you were at Carver for a year, or were you there longer? Because
no,
you said you went in 64?
Yes.
And so how long did you stay at Carver? Just that school year? Or
yes, that school year.
And then you went to Annie Pearl?
Yes. And then I went to Annie Pearl in first grade. And I had, Miss Pearl was my teacher.
Oh, great, great. Grade. And that school, for those who don't know, was basically where Dos Salsas is now. Was it kind of in that area?
No, it wasn't that one.
It was the other one.
There's two Annie Pearls. Originally, there was an Annie Pearl, and both of them were named Annie Pearl.
Okay.
So that's where the confusion is. The original Annie Pearl of Georgetown was, she was single, never married, never had children. But she was very much into teaching. And that was over there where, not exactly where Dos Salsas was. It was in almost where the oil exchange is now.
Okay.
And it was, I believe, a three-story building, according to Cliff Gustafson.
Oh, yeah.
He was telling me we were kind of, sometimes, you know, I think those of us have been born in Georgetown and raised together, we may be different colors and, you know, and different religions, but sometimes those of us that have roots here, we all pretend we're kind of kin.
Yeah.
So we kind of.
We all are.
Yeah.
So. Well, that's great.
So he told me it was a three-story, and then, because I thought it was at Dos Salsas, because a long time ago, before that, there was a Dairy Queen there. He said, no. He goes, it was closer to Austin Avenue.
Which oil exchange
right,
oil
exchanges,
is on the
yes.
corner of
and
University
he said it was three stories, yes.
Great, great.
And the second Annie Pearl, she just happened to be another teacher. But she also gave, many years to the Georgetown ISD as well. The first Annie Pearl gave probably her whole life. And the second Annie Pearl gave more than 30 years.
Wow, great. Well, we talked a little bit about, is there anything else you remember from elementary and then moving into a desegregated school in middle school and all that? Do you have any memories from that? You said that you thought it was a pretty positive experience. Do you have any memories of desegregating and, you know, the transition to Annie Pearl from Carver or anything like that? Or
no. As far as, you know, with other students, I think I got along well. I mean, sometimes there are little cliques, but they're little cliques today.
Yeah, it's cool.
Just for different
yeah.
reasons. And not always for race and stuff. But I do remember when it came to sports, that was sometimes still hard, even through my high school, sometimes when we played different cities.
Tell me a little bit about that, if you...
When I was in middle school, what we call junior high, middle school, junior high.
Right.
It was junior high for us, but nowadays it's middle school. we had, sometimes we play different towns, and I know some of, you know, my fellow athletic people or ladies, they would be kind of nervous when we went to different towns. I know, like, Taylor, I had one of my friends, Sippy, and she was real upset. I'm like, what's wrong? She goes, because we're going to play this town, which happened to be Taylor.
Was it because they're afraid of...
Yes, and, you know, she said, you know, the KKK's there. You know, her, I guess her family, you know, it was, you know, instilled in her that, you know, you need to be careful. Don't ever go there. Don't ever go alone. Don't ever, you know, and she didn't have any of her family with her. It was just our coaches and us players, and that was it. So, but everything went fine.
Now, did those other sports teams, are they integrated sports teams, or what? Well, I mean,
they were integrated, but even... Back then, between Taylor and Round Rock, they were predominantly white teams.
Okay, that's interesting.
And it was rare to see people of different colors on them.
And we're talking
even Hispanics, even Mexican Americans. They weren't very few. Okay.
That's interesting. Why do you think it is? I mean, just
I think it was probably still people getting used to that, and you probably had more people that their stronger beliefs that it was wrong to put them on.
Yeah,
so then it was favoritism.
And a lot of times the kids don't really notice that, but it's mainly the parents who are fighting it out.
It's the parents who are fighting out. The kids don't know. The kids usually never know.
Yeah.
It's rare.
Well, do you have anything? I guess we're moving kind of to high school now. Do you remember anything from that? You know, any memories from... That was a little while after desegregation, mm-hmm. but do you remember anything from high school? Any experiences or anything like that?
No, it was all positive.
Great.
I think for me, it was all positive.
Good. And my last question was going to be, do you have not so good memories from school? But it seems like maybe just the sports team, that might have been kind of...
Yeah, that would be one worse. I do remember once when me and I think it was Pat Cruz, and we went, there was a gift store in town. It was real popular.
In Georgetown.
Yes, in Georgetown, sorry. And my mother went there predominantly and shopped there, and she used to buy, you know, like lots of our dainty clothes there, underclothes and stuff. And then she would shop there a lot often. And then one day I brought another girl. She was Hispanic. She was darker than I am. Mm. And we just happened to go to the gift shop, and we waited to be waited on. It was a gift shop that you had to be waited on.
Right.
And waited, and they ignored us, And I was buying just a small birthday gift for someone, and I think she was buying, it might have been Mother's Day, because she wanted to buy something too. And then I went back and told my mom, I said, Mom, I went to the gift shop, but... You know, they took forever. They just like for to wait on us. We spent, you know, more than 30 minutes just waiting. She goes, first thing that came out of my mother's mouth was, who are you with? I looked at her like, what does that have to do with anything? She goes, who are you with? And I told her, you know, my friend. She goes, that's why. So either you were well known and okay, you know, or
they just didn't know who she was.
Well, they knew who she was, but... Oh. Her family wasn't, I guess, considered prominent enough.
Wow.
Yes. And then I'm sure partly because of her color as well.
Because she was dark. She was Mexican-American, but she was darker. Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
So they did not really wait on us. They finally waited on me, but they kind of ignored her, so I just kind of took care of her.
Well, I couldn't imagine being in how she must have felt. Or if she, you know, as a kid, you might have not even realized that was going on.
No, right. So, as a kid, I didn't.
Well.
No, Georgetown was pretty good. Most of the shops and everything was pretty good. And, of course, we were a big family. So, I mean, what was neat about back then is you couldn't get in trouble, that's for sure, because everybody knew everybody. And they'd always say, you're one of those Miranda girls, aren't you? And I said, yes, sir, you know, or yes, ma'am. And
so you didn't really, in Georgetown, other than that, did you experience any trouble like that? So they knew your family. Could you go in and
pretty much. But had I been in a different town where they didn't know my family, it'd have been a different story.
Really?
Yes.
any of your friends have any experiences like that? Or?
Yes, they did. I think in other towns like Round Rock.
Yeah.
Not so much in Austin, but you know the smaller towns.
Right.
Yes.
Well, that's interesting. Do you have?
And sometimes they tell you we won't wait on you.
Really? Right. Mm-hmm. I knew that was.
I didn't experience that
prominent with the black community.
Until I was in college and went to Seminole and.
Oh wow.
I had no clue, and then somebody else told me.
Yeah. Well, like we were saying, as kids, sometimes you don't really notice that, and you're oblivious.
Now, my siblings experienced that, though. I remember my older sister, Tina, and Paulette Taylor.
I know Paulette well. Okay. Yes.
Well, they were the first two to actually go home. It was something to do with school and like with a kind of co-op thing, and actually going to get more training or teaching. For teaching and stuff, and it was very rare that they got to go into certain places.
Wow.
And I know even more so my sister was sometimes allowed, but then they'd give her a hard time for Paulette, my sister.
Oh yes, because your sister was Mexican-American, Paulette's African-American.
Yes.
And well, so, I'll make sure that we ask Paulette about that.
Yeah, and my sister used to feel really bad, and she'd kind of explain what's the difference. We were both here for the same program. You know, we're both educated, you know, people, you know, what's the holdup?
Yeah. Well, I've come from a different time, too, so I don't really, it's hard for me to comprehend that, but I know it. That's why we're doing this project. Do you have any other stories or any other, we have a few more minutes. Is there anything else that you want to share with me or any memories of school, desegregation, students in school, teachers, anything that you want to? Share.
I do have one to share. Not too many people know about. And every time I mention it, the people that hear about it, then it kind of goes by the wayside or they end up passing away, so nobody's done much. But I know of the true slave quarters in Georgetown that still exist.
Okay, tell me about that.
Where I was raised, on the dairy off Airport Road.
And that's Airport Road
now. There's still existing slave quarters. And he brought pictures and stuff to show you. George Taylor's been helping me with the project a little bit. And George Taylor actually had a restaurant in Georgetown.
Where was that located?
Right on the corner of Austin Avenue and L&M Cafe.
Okay.
Almost across where the oil lube is now. You know how it separates into the building almost where Jack Brown Cleaners was kind of there? On that corner, he had L&M Cafe.
Okay.
So he's a good person to talk to get some of the history.
Definitely.
And we're trying to see if we can make this a historical site. Years ago, I mentioned it to, I can't recall his name, but he was a council member for the city of Georgetown years ago, and he passed away. And when I mentioned to him, he was interested, but he... Too many things on his plate, and then later he got sick, and then he died.
So you're looking,
Mr. Bonner.
Well, I will.
Councilmember Bonner.
Before we part ways today, off tape, we'll talk about how to do that because we can get a historical marker for that.
And so, I give you the history of the families and stuff. So.
Okay. Well, great, and that's out on Airport Road.
Yes.
I think I know where you're talking about. So we'll talk about that. Well, thanks for your time today, you know, as we go through this, we might think of some more things we want to come back and ask you. And we also might want to talk to some of your siblings, and which is great, so we can get the whole age perspective. You know, since you had a couple older ones, and you gave me a couple of great names, too, that we can track down.
Okay.
So thanks for your time.
You're welcome.